Pavel Durov is a Russian technology entrepreneur. He's a confident guy, and why not? He's rich for one. He became a millionaire in his 20s from his sale of Russia's largest social network, VK. And he's handsome, and seems to think so himself. On his birthday last October, Durov gave tips on how, now at age 36, he still looks so young. Two big factors, he says: he doesn't drink alcohol, and he lives alone. And like all confident rich guys, he likes to share his opinions. After he started his latest venture, a messaging app called Telegram, he spoke out against his biggest competitors, including WhatsApp.
It doesn't matter how many other messaging apps are out there if all of them suck. For me and for most of my team, WhatsApp sucked most.
Durov founded Telegram in 2013, using the proceeds from the sale of VK. And he self-funded Telegram pretty much for the last 7 years. It's grown around the world, but still pretty much lived in the shadow of Facebook-owned apps like WhatsApp and Messenger, Apple's iMessage, and more recently, nonprofit encrypted app Signal. But Alex Heath, my colleague at The Information, started digging more into Telegram late last year. Telegram was worth paying attention to again.
I was seeing data showing that this app was growing incredibly fast. It was the 9th most downloaded app worldwide last year, just behind Snapchat. Its CEO was increasingly becoming more outspoken about, you know, kind of key issues, antitrust, censorship, you know, alleged censorship by Apple and Google of certain kinds of apps.
And in the past week, Telegram has become one of the most important and fastest growing apps in the world. That growth has a lot of causes, including fears about right-wing censorship, deplatforming, and some concerns about what Facebook will do with data it collects in WhatsApp. Durov called it the greatest digital migration in human history. Which is maybe a little extreme, but it's worth paying attention to. Alex noticed it too.
The app is adding like 25 million active users in a period of like a few days. I think Facebook's very worried.
On this episode of The Information's 411, we bring you the story of Telegram and what it means about how we communicate these days. This is Corey Weinberg, a reporter for The Information. There are some big questions hanging over Telegram. For one, can it turn itself into actually, you know, a business? Alex and I reported exclusively this week that Durov has been talking to investors about raising debt and even considering an IPO.
They have to make money because they don't have, you know, their funding is running out and their cloud bills are massive, as we report.
Another question, particularly in a sensitive time for political speech, political violence, and disinformation online: will Telegram crack down on extremism? It has been one of the key apps for ISIS militants to communicate, recruit, and plan over the years. Some researchers from the University of Texas that I spoke with see similar trends happening now with right-wing extremists on Telegram. But first, we should look at the Telegram origin story. It starts, of course, with Durov. He's a coder, he's a product thinker, he's an entrepreneur. He founded VK in 2006, just out of university, and eventually grew it to more than 100 million users throughout Russia and Eastern Europe. It was one of Russia's most popular websites.
He started what was essentially the Russian version of Facebook, a site called VK. You know, like local outlets even called him, you know, the Russian Mark Zuckerberg.
As VK grew, weird things started happening. Durov disappeared for months on end. The investment group that bought out Durov's stake had close ties to Vladimir Putin. There were growing reports that Russia wanted to control Durov.
Yeah, he was essentially exiled, or so he says, from Russia himself when allies of the government kind of kicked him out, as he says, of the company he started, VK. And he kind of made a pact to never be influenced by government pressure ever again.
He continued to cultivate a somewhat mythical, somewhat geeky sort of image. When he quit VK in 2013, he quoted a passage from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in his resignation letter by saying, "So long and thanks for all the fish." He now lives in Dubai during the winter and summers in Finland.
He's just this very colorful character who dresses like Steve Jobs, wears all black turtlenecks. He looks like a mix of like Steve Jobs and Neo from The Matrix, wears long black trench coats, you know, posts photos of him shirtless, ripped in the desert, riding camels.
While at VK, Durov started building Telegram in 2013. He says it was so he could have an app in which the Russian government couldn't read his messages. And messaging apps were becoming the hot new thing. They have network effects, as in they become more popular the more that more users are added to the service, and more competitors sprung up. There was Kik, Facebook Messenger, Viber, and of course WhatsApp, which Facebook bought for about $20 billion in 2014. No one really knew yet, though, how to monetize these apps. They didn't run advertising, really, or sell data. Durov didn't mind. He said he would never sell Telegram like WhatsApp did. Here's Durov in 2015.
You know, we really like to be independent at this point. We think there's more than market shares and revenue streams.
But how did Telegram really differentiate amid the flurry of messaging apps? Mostly, it's fast. It allows users to distribute massive files, and users can access their accounts on multiple platforms simultaneously. There are both public and private groups, which can reach hundreds of thousands of members. And Durov boasts, importantly, that Telegram doesn't use an algorithm to filter content. Telegram keeps adding more features.
I think what makes it unique is that it's an incredibly feature-rich application. They've essentially built their own Dropbox inside the app. You can share large files, videos, you can do full article-length posts. They just added voice chats that are kind of like the Clubhouse, you know, social app that's really buzzy in Silicon Valley right now. And he's really set up Telegram to be like a perfect app for dissidents, for people who are trying to evade law enforcement. You don't have to use your real name. Group admins of these channels can make themselves anonymous completely. You know, the app offers encryption, though only for one-to-one chats, not group chats like Signal or WhatsApp. He's made the pact with users that he'll never collect, you know, user data for ad targeting or anything like that.
But Telegram has a big problem coming up. Mainly, how does it keep the lights on? Or more precisely, how does it keep paying its server bills? Remember, it doesn't really have any revenue, and it doesn't have huge employee costs. Telegram is just made up of about 60 or 70 employees. But Telegram has said its infrastructure costs would exceed $200 million next year. Durov funds it himself. He doesn't have a big parent company like Facebook footing the bill.
And it's in contrast to their other competitor, Signal, who is an actual nonprofit structured as one, funded by donations, mostly by, ironically, WhatsApp co-founder Brian Acton. And Telegram is trying to, I would say, have it both ways. They're trying to be anti-establishment, anti-capitalist, while also needing a way to make money and sustain the business.
As much as Durov has proven himself as a great technical mind, the business side hasn't been as strong. Telegram's attempts at making money have pretty much failed, even though Durov was kind of chasing the most buzzy thing. It tried to start a bot platform in 2015 when that was all the rage. It's also been very popular with crypto enthusiasts. Telegram sold its own security tokens in an initial coin offering in 2018 when ICOs were popular. Top Silicon Valley firms were interested, and the company raised nearly $2 billion. But the SEC called it off and made Telegram return most of that money. They said Telegram was essentially selling unregulated securities. Now, Alex and I reported this week that Durov is taking a different, more legal tact. He is discussing with investors a debt financing. One possibility is that the debt converts into equity for new investors in an IPO. The financing could help Telegram raise over $1 billion. Alex thinks investors will be interested, even if Telegram doesn't yet make any money.
I imagine that Telegram could fetch a valuation of at least $20 billion if it were to raise at the current growth rate.
The timing of all this, the growth, the financing, is a bit ironic in a way. Facebook, Twitter, and other large internet platforms are all under the microscope right now for how online content and speech get transformed into real-world violence. The world wants to know, are internet companies essentially abetting extremists? Telegram, however, has a history of being more lax about that question. Just this month, a British research group, the Center for Research and Evidence on Security Threats, called Telegram, quote, the single most important online hub for both official and unofficial jihadist communication and content. And here's Durov in 2015.
Privacy, ultimately, and our right for privacy, is more important than our fear of bad things happening, like terrorism. And if you look at ISIS, yes, there's a war going on in the Middle East. It's a series of tragic events. But ultimately, the ISIS will always find a way to communicate within themselves. And if any means of communication turns out to be not secure for them, they'll just switch to another one.
Telegram, of course, knows now that this reputation could be a bad sign for them, and it has taken some steps to try to solve the problem. In recent years, it has tried to purge ISIS-related accounts. It tracks each day how many it has banned and posts the number publicly. In recent days, it has started blocking accounts that belong to right-wing extremists. But researchers who study the issue still see a growing number of accounts discussing, in public, groups, racist and potentially violent political subjects on Telegram. That's especially the case after the right-wing app Parler was essentially shut down last week. The founder of the Proud Boys right-wing group said he would be posting on Telegram more often. One of the researchers studying the issue is Jacob Gursky at the University of Texas's Center for Media Engagement. He has been following Telegram groups of right-wing users for the past few months. After Parler was shut down, Telegram was a convenient place to go.
In this group called Parler Lifeboat, there is an ongoing podcast of people just chatting and talking about very, very radical things, sometimes openly discussing violence. Those people, at least anecdotally, one of those people just straight up said, "Hey, I was deplatformed from Parler. Proud Boys brought me here, and I think we should join our groups together with them."
Katie Joseph is Gursky's colleague at the Center for Media Engagement. She is watching people flock from Parler to Telegram in search of an app where they can remain anonymous.
They say, if you're new to Telegram, here's how to protect your data. And they always have pinned posts that are teaching people how to, you know, reduce their exposure on Telegram. They make sure that people aren't using their real photos, not their real name, don't have their number exposed. You know, I noticed a guy who had had a photo of himself, as his profile picture, and someone commented, "Don't you know that facial recognition systems work better on white people?" Which just really stood out to me because it's true. It's just an interesting application of that fact.
Both Joseph and Gursky think apps like Telegram will become more important as far-right users and extremists both flee more mainstream, larger social networks and have their own spaces shut down.
There's always been alternatives to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, such as Diaspora, but they haven't always had that many users. And I think that the groups that are having an influx in users are those who are speaking to saying, you know, we're not going to have an anti-conservative bias. We're a free speech zone.
Some extremist group leaders have their own encrypted servers and use more public spaces like Twitter or public Telegram groups to find or radicalize potential followers who then follow them into more private online conversations.
There's a fluidity of influence between Telegram, WhatsApp, Twitter, private peer-to-peer channels that are self-hosted, that any individual platform's attempts to regulate are going to miss.
That's our show this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks, as always, to Ariella Markowitz for producing this episode. And thanks for Alex, Jacob, and Katie for taking the time to speak with me. Have a great week, everybody.